The last talk of the day, and the speaker is Omiros Papaspiliopoulos from Universitat Pompeu Fabra, and we'll talk about optimal filtering and the dual process.
Okay, thank you very much for the invitation and for staying until the last talk. There were some talks about exact approximations and approximate approximations. This is about exactness, but it comes at a cost. So what I will present is something which I find kind of curious and somehow neat, but the practical implications of it I'm not entirely sure about. So it would be interesting to have some feedback. But it also might be an interesting test ground for theory, because you will see that there is some interesting explicit filters away from those that we are usually used to work with. So just to point out that this is work that will very soon appear in the Bernoulli, jointly with Matteo Ruggiero from Turin. And again, to put things in some perspective here, what is curious in this talk is that we will make a link between some ideas that are actually quite well known in population genetics and the filtering problem. And of course, you can only take my word for what I will say, but we discovered the tool independently. Then the tool looked too good to be true, so I looked carefully the literature to see if this is something that people have noticed and realized that there is these tools have been used in population genetics and probability for some time. But at least reassuringly, that showed that we're doing something sensible, because it kind of came up naturally, the technique I will show you. So and again, due to time constraint, I will skip some references, etc., and numerical results. I'll just focus on the main idea. So the problem is the filtering problem, and what we want to do, I will assume that there is a likelihood, but later on at the end of the talk, I will talk about some situations that likelihood does not exist. So there is a likelihood, and I will embed the filter into a continuous time setting. And I will tell you why. There is not absolutely necessary. Some of the things I will show you, they're not relying on that assumption, but it actually helps you both as a model and to find the right tools to analyze it. So assume that you have a discretely sampled continuous time signal and conditionally IID observations with some density fx of y, and I'm interested in the filter. And as all of you know, if you have the filter, then you can compute likelihoods, you can compute smoothing and whatever. Of course, also it's good to have in mind for what I'm going to present here that if the signal is constant over time, then this is just a classical Bayesian inference problem. Okay. Actually, maybe I can even use this one. So this is the same thing you've seen before in various instances, but in actually there was a talk today that most closely followed this description. But it's important to put the notation here in the right way and understand what's going on, and I emphasize some property of the filtering problem. So you start with some distribution, nu zero, that's your prior. Nu is your prior, and then you start obtaining a sequence of distributions by iterating two operations. One is the update, and the other is the prediction operator. So let me just show you how each one works. So basically, the filtering recursion is the composition of the two operations. Okay, so how does the update operation works? Well, update is the Bayes theorem. So you take a measure, that's xi, and you have an observation y, and you basically update it according to the Bayes rule. And this is the normalizing constant of the thing, the predictive likelihood, if you like, or something like that. Now, a notion from Bayesian statistics that everyone knows is the notion of conjugacy, and basically we say that a measure and a likelihood, if you like, are a conjugate pair if this measure belongs in a family and the update operator leaves the measure on the same family. Okay, so basically after you update, you're in the same family, but with some, it's a parametric family, and you change the parameters, basically. So that's the conjugacy in Bayesian statistics. The prediction operator takes a measure and propagates it according to the system dynamics. Okay, and what is interesting about these operations is that they have some sort of nice behavior when you apply mixtures to them. In particular, the prediction operator is a linear operator, so if you put a mixture in, you get a mixture out. Actually, you get exactly the same mixing weights, you're just changing the distributions. Okay, so you put a mixture of distributions, you propagate them, you get another mixture, and you've changed the distributions, but the weights are the same. The update operator, which makes analyzing mathematically the filtering problem difficult, is not a linear operator, but it does have some interesting structure when you look at mixtures. If you put a mixture in, you get a mixture out, and basically you update the distributions, but you also update the weights, and now there's a global relationship among the weights because of the renormalization. Okay, so this is linear, this is not linear, but it still preserves some of the mixture structure. You just update the weights as well in a non-linear way. You get the measure on the denominator, basically. That's what I mean, it's non-linear. Okay, that's how this works. Now, a finite dimensional filter, of course, is the one for which the evolution of these filters is in a finite dimensional family, okay? And so basically you identify some finite dimensional family, f of little f, f for finite, such that if you start inside this family, both your update and your prediction are inside this family, okay? And therefore, the only thing you need to keep track is what are the parameters describing the distribution. And examples of these are both, let's say, non-parametric and parametric. By non-parametric, I mean any model for which the state space is finite. Okay, so you don't have to be specific about how the probabilities evolve, but that's why I'm calling that non-parametric. The number of parameters is equal to the size of the space, basically. And parametric version of that is the linear Gaussian system. So one question is there anything sensible outside this family for which some of this structure is preserved? Let me just, as an example, which I will return later on, let me just show you a statistical model which is reasonable, so it's not completely made up to work for me. So for instance, I will return to this example later on. Think of a non-linear and non-Gaussian system that I might be interested to filter, just to put some perspective here of an application. Suppose that I have some sort of Cox-type process, so I have Poisson data with some intensity, and the intensity is random. And I want to set this up to have some tractability. So in particular, maybe I want to take the margin. I might want to take the signal to be stationary in time, and have a marginal distribution which is a gamma. So if this were a static problem, that would be the Poisson gamma standard conjugate model for count. So if I want to take a signal which has marginal gamma distribution, one way to take it is to take the square of a Gaussian and take the Gaussian AR process. But more generally, actually, that's a special case of taking the signal to be what's known as a CIR process. And you discretely sample the CIR process. That has if you set up the parameters in the right way, this has the gamma as an invariant and limiting distribution. So think of the Poisson CIR model as an example. Okay. And the reason why I said, one of the reasons why I said continuous time is sort of convenient to think of, because it's easier to construct in continuous time models with certain marginals. Okay, where if you do the discrete time version, is harder. Okay. The idea we'll try to introduce and explore in this talk is that if you want to move to something realistic outside the finite dimensional family, you have to move to what we can call computable filter. So the difference between a computable filter and finite dimensional filter is the following, effectively. I will call a computable filter one for which the filtering distribution is characterized in terms of finite number of parameters that can be computed at a cost which is, of course, not exponential. If the cost were exponential, then clearly everything is more or less computable. Everything is in some sense, feasible. But at a cost that is at most sort of polynomial. Okay. So special cases of this framework are finite dimensional filters, in which case the number of parameters does not grow with time. And therefore, to compute the filter involves a cost which is linear in time. Okay? So if the number of parameters you need to compute is constant in time, but you have to do n steps, then it's a linear. I will try to see what is there for which maybe the number of parameters grows in time, but not too badly. And I will identify these filters as you could expect, especially when you think about it a little while, as mixtures of finite dimensional distributions. And the mixtures will be indexed by two types of parameters. One would be a discrete parameter, and that would be sort of indicating the mixture. And the other is a continuous parameter, multidimensional potentially, both of them, which is sort of some other parameters that identify locally the parameters of a local element of a mixture. Okay, so M will basically index which component of the mixture you will be, and theta the local parameters for that distribution. All right. So what I'm going to do in the SQL is I will show you a framework in which this structure appears, and you can exploit it. And then I will give you some examples, two examples in particular, and mention other examples that we can work out of processes and signals that fit in that framework. One of which is the model I gave you before, the Poisson CIR model. Okay. So I will show you some assumptions here that they look quite incredible to be true, but they are true for several processes. But of course not for everything, that's why it's kind of limited. All right, so I will show you a set of conditions under which you can have this computability of filters. A special case of which is the Kalman filter and the finite dimensional filters that we already know. After I show you the conditions, I will show you a more easy set of conditions to check that they exploit the continuous time again. And then I will show you the examples. So the conditions are as follows. First, I will assume that the signal has a reversible measure. It's not necessarily a probability measure, so the signal could potentially be not stable. It could be non-stationary. But I want to have a reversibility measure. So there is a measure for which this thing is true. And basically, then I will use also the following notation. As I told you, there will be two types of parameters going on here. One is an index, and it will be in general a multi-index. Okay, so it will be a vector of indices, and that will be denoted by m, and by the modulus of that is the sum of the elements of that thing. Zero would be the zero element, so basically the zero 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 element of that space, and ej is the coordinate of where everything is zero except for the jth position, which is one. And I will assume the product order on this space. Okay, and because of the product order, I can compare two elements I and m, two set of indices, and I can compute their difference. Okay. Okay, this is the notation. So, okay, you can of course imagine how a single index works, but that's just to show you that the whole thing works for multi indices. This is sort of the picture. This is the zero element of if you have two indices, and this is sort of how the product order works here. Okay, so I can order these pairs in this pyramid kind of way. Okay, so what I'm going to show you later on is that my computable filters will evolve mixtures, each of which is sitting somewhere on this lattice. Okay. And I will be able to compute the parameters and the weights of these mixtures. So that's one assumption that's not so strong, is on the signal. The second assumption is really strong. And it is exactly the corresponding idea of conjugacy. Okay. So what I assume here is that there exists, the first assumption was on the signal. The second assumption is on the likelihood and something to do with the signal. In particular, what I want to do with the signal is that I want to find a sequence of distributions. So how do I construct these distributions? I take these distributions to be changes of measures from that reversibility measure. Okay, so I start with this reversibility measure. Think of the stationary case, that's the easiest. So that's the measure that leaves the signal invariant. And I'm doing changes of measure from that, characterized by two parameters, a discrete and a continuous. Okay, so H is changing that measure to something else, and it's parameterized in this way. And what I want is that this family of measures, parameterized now by two parameters, is conjugate to the likelihood. Okay, so in the Poisson case I gave you, for instance, that would be the gamma family, okay, with some degrees of freedom and some continuous parameter. Okay, and you can think of similar things like that. Okay, so basically, this is the second assumption, conjugacy. And once you have that, and when you do the update operator, when you do the update operation, what you are doing effectively is you're moving to another element of the same family with new parameters. M goes to t of m, little t of m, and theta goes to little to capital T of theta, that involves the data point. Okay, so the update operator just changes these two parameters, and the normalizing constant, actually because of the conjugacy, it's something that you can work out analytically. The third assumption. And as I show you, all these assumptions are satisfied in these examples, in several examples. And this is the most interesting idea of all, is the idea of duality. So what is this thing telling me? Let me start from the bottom and go to the top, okay? This is now a property that involves these functions H, the functions that define the conjugate change of measure, if you like. And duality says the following. Imagine my signal is X, okay? My signal is X, and it evolves according to the P semigroup. And duality asks that for this signal X, you can find a stochastic process that takes values on the parameter space. Okay, my original stochastic process takes values in the space of X. I'm now trying to find a stochastic process that takes values on the space of the parameters and satisfies this property that when I take expectations with respect to X for given m and theta, starting from little x, this expectation is the same as the expectation of the same function for fixed little x to the original point and averaged over the process on the parameter space, started from the same conditions that you have in this function. So there are three fixed things here, the initial value x, the parameters, and I'm just switching the role of them. Okay? So if this is basically, when this happens, I call this stochastic process, the stochastic process on m and theta, dual to this stochastic process x for this particular function h. Okay? So I call this the duality relationship. But for the methodology and the filtering algorithms to work, this process for m and theta cannot be arbitrary. So what I ask for this process m and theta to possess is the following. I ask that theta, the joint pair is a Markov process. Okay? X is a Markov process, and this will be a Markov process. And the characteristics of this Markov process are as follows. Theta evolves autonomously as an ordinary differential equation. So basically, theta is a deterministic process. And m is a stochastic process, lives on integers, and it is basically a depth process that can be modulated by the theta process. Okay? All of this structure is necessary for the formula I'm going to show you to work. And it's satisfied by several examples. Okay? So the duality basically exchanges the role of x and the parameters by looking at another process that lives in a different space, potentially a much easier space to work with. This is stochastic, but it will be discrete, and this is deterministic. And I want this relationship to hold. How do I find such a stochastic process is what I'm going to tell you a little bit later on. Because at the moment it looks incredible that you can even find one. So, as I said, one of my requirements, and in fact, let me just show you back in the figure, one of my requirements is that the M process is a depth process understood in this partial order. So if you start somewhere in this M process, you are just moving down the lattice, okay? Unless something happens, which is the update operator. So so if you just let the system run, basically M will tend to go to the absorption state, to zero, because it's a depth process. So that's the idea, and because of the duality, basically, that's the sort of corresponding, if you have ergodicity, that's a corresponding thing that as X converges to its stationary distribution, M basically converges to zero, which is the ground state. The duality functions, how do I came up with the duality functions? Basically, I picked them up so that they are Radon-Nikodym derivatives between measures which are conjugate to the likelihood. Okay, so I have my likelihood, and I'm looking at measures which are conjugate to the likelihood, and I'm just looking at the Radon-Nikodym derivative between them, okay? Provided there is one discrete and multi-discrete and one continuous parameter. Now, another point here is that because of the structure I'm asking on the depth process, so this is a deterministic system, and the depth process has rates that they have some special structure, okay? The transition probabilities of this depth process can be worked out analytically. Okay, independently of the functional forms of these things, you can work out analytically the transition probabilities because it's a depth process with a not too complicated rates. So you can work out analytically these probabilities. So the result I want to show you is that if you have this framework, then you have computability of the filter. And there are two things one needs to check, is the prediction and the update. So let's start with the prediction, which is actually the hard part. The result is that if you start with one of these measures, that is in the conjugate class, and you propagate according to your signal, you get a mixture of these measures, where the mixing weights are precisely, the mixture, you start from some state m, and you will move to a state which is smaller than m in this partial order. And the mixing weights are precisely the transition probabilities of this depth process. Okay, so you start from somewhere in this lattice. Let me just go back. You start from some measure that sits on this lattice. Let's say that sits here with some parameters theta. And after you propagate the system for any amount of time, you will have moved to any state which is accessible from here, to any of the states which are smaller than here. You cannot move there. You can move anywhere which is accessible from here. And the update, the parameters, the theta parameters will update deterministically according to the deterministic system that updates with these initial conditions. And the random part, the m part, will move to some smaller state with some probability, which are the transition probabilities, which are computable, as I said, because you can work out all this analytically. And why is this true? So let me show you the proof, which is not very complicated, as you can see. And you will see where exactly I need reversibility and where exactly I need duality. So the propagation is just the integral of the semigroup starting from this initial distribution. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to use reversibility to move from pi p to p pi. Okay, so basically I change the integration here. If I change the integration, then I can, this is now integral with respect to the starting point, if you like, and I can squeeze the stationary measure out. And if I look what I have here, so what I've done basically with reversibility, just to give you the intuition, is that I want to propagate a measure, and I've changed that to a problem of computing an expectation. Okay, so this is a propagation of a measure, and now it's an expectation. And it's an expectation of this function with respect to this semigroup. It's this one here. And now what I'm going to do is duality. So I write this expectation as another expectation with respect to that. And now this system is simple, so this expectation is something tractable, because basically the theta process is deterministic, and this is the death process, and it has moved to one of these states with these probabilities. Okay? So you start from one of these distributions, and you move to a mixture of these distributions, and the mixing probabilities are the probabilities of this transition, of the hidden dual, the dual that is there, even if you don't see it. And because of conjugacy, you don't need to follow all the details of this result, but that's not complicated either. Because of the conjugacy, when you are using now the update operator on any of these things, you get back a similar thing. Okay? And this is because of the thing I told you earlier, that the update operator is not a linear operator, but it preserves some structure of mixtures. So the update operator on a mixture is a mixture with updated distributions. The updated distributions are in the same family now because of the conjugacy. And then there are some updated weights, okay? But the updated weights, you can compute them easily because it's just a renormalization. So if you start from any mixture in this family, when you propagate, you are in another mixture, and when you update, you are in a mixture of the same family. So you preserve the structure. And this is because of the duality, this hidden process, the dual process, which is somehow linked magically to your system. So how do you identify these duals? And this is another point where continuous time comes for help. One way to identify these duals is to look locally, to look very close in time, and use the generator. Because in some sense, you're trying to match up expectations, which is very difficult, but it becomes easy if you have continuous time, because you can go to the limit of time, and then you're matching up some functions, basically. So we're working with Markov processes here, so let's calligraphic A be the generator of the Markov process. And it relates to the semigroup by the Kolmogorov forward equations. Okay, so partial derivatives of expectations, you can write them as in time, you can write them as derivatives in space. Okay, so this is the generator of the Markov process. Just to give you some quick examples, in case you're not entirely familiar with the idea. Generators of SDEs, of stochastic differential equations, are second order differential operators. There is the drift relates to the first derivative operator, and the diffusion with the second derivative operator. If you have an ODE, so if there's no randomness in the dynamics, then it's a first order differential operator, like that. And if you have a Markov jump process, the Markov jump process, the generator, looks like a sum, where basically you look at all states from where you start, where can you go, and you compute these differences, and the rates that multiply this transition. So in particular, if you have a system which is deterministic in theta and moves according to an ODE, and then which is the death process modulated by theta, its generator looks like that. Okay, so this is the generator of the deterministic system, which is like an ODE without this, and this is the jump process going down. Okay, so that's how the generators for processes that we will be working with in a moment look like. So the local duality says that a sufficient condition for finding a dual is to do the following: to find a function which is convenient for you and serves your purpose. And for that function, when you look at it as a function of x for given m and theta, and you apply the generator to that, okay, that's a function now of x, m and theta, you want this operation to be exactly the same as the operation of taking the function h, fixing x, looking at it as a function of m and theta, and computing the generator of the dual process to that. So you just try to match the think of this as being diffusion and this as a jump process. You try to match the derivatives of this with operations you do on m and theta here. And that's actually something quite easy to check, in fact. And I'll give you some examples. And if you, this is a sufficient condition for duality because you've matched the two generators, and because you've matched the process locally, and because of the Kolmogorov equations and uniqueness of Laplace transforms, then basically you've matched up any expectation you want. So just because you match the process locally, you match them macroscopically as well. So are the processes that they satisfy this strange set of conditions? And the answer is yes. And I will show you, just to put it in perspective, because I think it's a fun way of thinking about the Kalman filter, not the usual one we see in the Kalman filter. Of course, it's satisfied for linear Gaussian systems. It's satisfied for CIR signals. I will show you these two examples. And I don't have any time to show you, but we have similar results for other sort of processes. So the linear Gaussian is, the signal is invariant with respect to the Gaussian distribution. The CIR signal is invariant with respect to the gamma distribution. But there are similar results for Wright-Fisher processes, which are invariant with respect to the Dirichlet distribution or to the beta distribution as a special case. And also we have results for infinite dimensional signals, which are invariant with respect to the Dirichlet process. So it's a signal that has an invariant distribution Dirichlet process, or the sort of the so-called Dawson-Watanabe process, which is invariant with respect to the gamma process. Okay. So most of the models for which standard Bayesian conjugate analysis is feasible, there is a corresponding filtering situation which is computable. I have a couple of minutes. So let me just show you the examples and we'll finish. So for linear SDs, this is the linear SD. Okay. The invariant measure pi is a Gaussian. I've parameterized it as if it's stationary. It doesn't have to be, but it was more convenient for the calculation. The generator of this process, as I said before, is a second order differential operator. This is the drift, this is the diffusion coefficient. And which are the duality functions? Well, I know that what is conjugate to the Gaussian is the Gaussian, so I'll take changes of measures of the Gaussian distributions. So basically I pick any Gaussian distribution and I divide it by the marginal Gaussian distribution. And because I take any Gaussian distribution, there are two parameters. Theta here is two-dimensional, is the mean and the variance. So this is the theta part. And in this case, there's no discrete part. So this is one of the cases where the dual is just theta. There's no m. And that's why actually this filter would turn out to be finite-dimensional instead of computable. Now, if I do a small calculation, so in order to identify the dual, what do I need to do? I need to take this function, and apply the generator to this function. Okay, this is what I need to do. And if I do a small calculation, what I discover is the following: that when I apply the differential operator on this function, I can write the result of that as follows. This is the derivative with respect to x, but actually, a small calculation shows you that you can write the same answer as a derivative with respect to the variance. To the mean, and as a derivative with respect to the variance, with these coefficients in front. Okay. So basically, what does this tell you? This tells you that the linear Gaussian system is dual to a deterministic process. Okay. For which the mean value evolves according to this ODE, and the variance evolves according to this ODE, which are well-known ODEs for the evolution of the mean and the variance in a linear Gaussian system. The same thing holds for multi-dimensions, it's just that it's a bit more painful to write the equations. So here, in this case, just because of this result, there is no discrete part, there is only continuous part. It evolves completely deterministically, and the dual is deterministic, and it's described by this system of ordinary differential equations. And the filter is finite-dimensional. Okay. So the update is just solving the ODEs, and the prediction, and then the update just updates by conjugation. For the CIR process, I can follow the same approach. The stationary distribution here is gamma. This is the generator of the CIR process. The duality functions are functions which are conjugate to the gamma. So gamma is conjugate to the gamma. So I take random Nicodemus derivative between gamma functions. And what you will notice here, this is something I discovered after some calculation. I cannot take any gamma distribution. I can take the second parameter to be anything, but the first parameter is parameterized in a specific way, is delta over 2, which is the degrees of freedom of the marginal, plus an integer. So that doesn't recover any gamma, because it doesn't work for any gamma. OK, you don't need to look at all the calculation, but if I apply the generator on this function, what I have is this equation. So once you get trained a little bit with this business, you realize that what you see here is equivalently, you see here the operation of a generator of a jump process, Markov jump process, which from state m jumps to either m minus 1 or up to m plus 1 with these rates, minus the sum of the rates, the state that you're currently at. So when you apply the generator of the original process here, you get the same answer as you when you apply the generator of a Markov jump process that lives on the M space, but can jump up or down. So that's not a death process anymore. So that takes me further up, and that would create an infinite number of possibilities. If I go only down, I can control the number of possibilities by my current state. So that's not good enough. So what I can do after manipulation, and I don't have the time to explain it to you, but actually it's a very simple way how to think about this. The reason why this has failed is because I tried only to look at m, but I didn't try to do anything with theta. So if I look a little bit more carefully, I can rewrite exactly the same thing as something which is involves m minus 1 and m, and involves a derivative with respect to theta. So if I want to get a death process, I have to update theta as well. I cannot just keep theta fixed and play only with m. And then what I find here is that the dual is a process that has a theta part that involves according to this OD with this drift, and a Markov jump process that jumps down from m to m minus 1 with this rate. That's an example of the thing I gave you before. And once I work out, so you can solve this OD, by the way, here. This OD for theta, you can solve it analytically. And you find that the solution to this OD is this thing here. The transition probabilities of the transition probabilities of this death process, you can work them out analytically, as I've said before. In this particular case, they become binomial. Okay, this is the transition probabilities to go down. And immediately, just by applying the duality result I gave you earlier, you find that when you propagate this gamma by the CIR process, you get a binomial mixture of gamma distributions. Okay, with the parameters that you can all work out analytically. And basically, when you do the update, again, you have a closed form. Okay. So this is the idea of duality and how it relates to optimal filtering, and how basically it gives you finite dimensional filters, a special case, and it gives you a bit more. You get a bit more. Okay. You have more than just the finite dimensional filters. And the thing that makes all this be one thing is the duality. So what I haven't talked about here, and I can answer maybe some question if you have, is the complexity of that. We'll have some results about the complexity of this algorithm. You don't have to do exact, to be honest. What is probably most realistic, and some numerical examples show that, the actual number of components with reasonable weights is really small. So you can prune components and go back to a finite dimensional filter, but where you do a reasonable approximation to the number of components. You can do smoothing likelihood with the simulation stuff. And potentially, you can use this idea to approximate other filters. Okay. Let me stop here and maybe take some questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Omiros? No? Okay. All right, let's thank Omiros one more time and the speaker for these days.